RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Leslie Manoukian is the president and founder of Health Freedom Defence Fund, a former successful Wall Street business executive. Leslie is also an award-winning documentary filmmaker. In 2011, she released The Greater Good to rave reviews and awards. The documentary explores the debate surrounding the effectiveness and safety of vaccines and the importance of health freedom. And we are going to be chatting about an important case in the US, a win for HFDF. A court decision has declared that prior Supreme Court rulings for vaccine mandates are inapplicable to the COVID shot. Why? Well, it has implications for any shot in the US that doesn't stop transmission or infection. And Leslie Manoukian is with us now. Thank you for joining us, Leslie, on our radio station.
So great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me. I love your beautiful country.
Well, thank you. And I love your beautiful country. I was only there.
Thank you very much.
4 months ago. So, yeah. In the Mojave Desert, as a matter of fact. There you go.
I'm glad it was a few months ago because otherwise it would be very hot.
Yeah, it was actually quite cold.
Was it?
Lucky I bought my padded jacket is all I can say. All right. First question, nothing. Well, maybe it does have something to do with what we're about to talk about. I want to get your reaction to what happened to Trump.
Oh.
There you go.
Speechless on that one. I think there are two possibilities. One is that it was an inside job. And, you know, it's very interesting, this sort of catastrophic security failure that seems to have happened a couple of times in the last year. You know, if you look at what happened with Israel and them having people parachuting in, essentially parasailing in or paragliding in, whatever it was, and that they just didn't know when, you know, I know many Israelis who say that that's just impossible. And so here we are, same kind of a thing. So, I mean, I think we have to conclude either that it was an inside job, because it doesn't stack up. You know, there were all these eyewitnesses who say that they were trying to alert the police and the Secret Service, and no one did anything. Or else, you know, that there's this is all theater, and you know, they've made a very, very effective martyr out of President Trump. He was already, I think, being cast as the martyr, you know, the persecuted one, with all of these lawsuits that they have filed against him, you know, all of these legal challenges to him. And if this did anything, it was to make him, you know, it increased that sort of persecuted status 1,000 times. So it's very, very interesting. And like, I have zero idea what the truth is. I just don't believe the mainstream narrative, I guess.
Many of us don't. What about, and this kind of starts to nudge into what we're going to be talking about, his role in Operation Warp Speed, rolling out this COVID vaccine or the series of vaccines and still kind of sticking to his guns on this issue. What do you make of that?
I think it's very interesting, Paul. You know, he, all of these, I think the sort of diehard Trump supporters. So let me just say, I used to be a very, very committed liberal up until about, gosh, 15, 16 years ago. And then everything changed for me within the first week of Obama's administration, once he was inaugurated and he didn't shut down Guantanamo Bay. He didn't pull out of Afghanistan. He appointed a bunch of Monsanto execs to head the USDA, US Department of Agriculture. He refused to recognize the Armenian genocide, something that he had campaigned on. And I think it was very telling. And so by the end of the first week of his office, I said to myself, actually I said to my husband, I've been had. And that was the last time I ever really believed anything that I was being told, you know, change we can believe in and all this stuff. And, so I share this because I'm not someone who has been I've been on both sides for a long time. For the last 15 years, I would say I'm a fiercely pro-independence. I believe that both parties are kind of playing the people, that they do much more. I fully believe that there is a uniparty controlling this country. and that that is a major problem. And I think the only question is Trump part of it? And I did vote for him, but I'm not sure. I always said that I pray he is, you know, or I hope he is who I pray he is, but I fear that he's one of them. And I think it's very possible to believe that this is all theater. And I just, it's really hard to say. And so, you know, all of his things, I mean, he pulled us out of TPP. And then what did he do? He went and created the USMCA, which is this Canada-Mexico-US agreement, which is worse than the TPP was. And he, a few weeks ago, you may recall that he put out a statement saying that he was going to investigate Big Pharma. Well, his campaign manager is one of the biggest pharma lobbyists in the country. And, you know, he was very close to the people at Gilead and part of the whole remdesivir thing. And so people are always giving him a pass. And I just think, you know, they say, judge people by what they do, not what they say. And I think he's done a lot of things that are very, very questionable. And he's put a ton of people into his cabinet that are not good people. And so, I mean, I think we have to have a lot of questions about this. And it's not a surprise to me. You know, I'm kind of wobbling because this is not something that I have talked about publicly before, Paul, and I haven't really formulated my opinion. I've been having this debate for the last 36 hours with a bunch of friends and family members that I spent with yesterday. And, you know, many of them are fully in, like Trump all in. And then many of us have questions about this whole thing. And it just strikes me that it's very, very similar to other kinds of very emotional events. You go, how did they get the picture perfect with him with the flag over his head?
Yeah, good question.
You know,
it's too perfect.
I mean, and I know so many people, like I'm on some text threads here with, you know, a lot of local women and, oh, this picture will live in infamy. Well, how the heck? And I've zoomed out to look, and that flag is 80 to 100 feet above his head. How did they get that picture? And it's nowhere when you zoom out at the event. So, I mean, this is very strange stuff, right? And then there's a picture of him sort of appearing to be praying when he's down. And, I mean, how did they get that picture? I really wonder. And, you know, it's so
and
many
the
questions.
Bullet, there's even a shot of the bullet streaking, if you can believe it. I mean, it's going at 2,500 feet per second.
And they just caught that? I mean, maybe it was video. So let me just say, a lot of questions. And here's the thing. He says he's going to investigate Big Pharma. But let's not forget that in his first term, he said he was going to implement a vaccine safety commission. And it was going to be headed by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And Bobby came out after his meeting in Trump Tower with the president and said, you know, I'm going to be doing this and I'm going to be heading this. And then it never went anywhere. And it was quietly shuttered over the next year or 2 years. So it's not like we haven't seen this before. And so now he's saying that he's going to investigate Big Pharma, but is he really? Like, I sure hope so. You know, there's no doubt. There's one thing that I have zero doubt about, Paul, and that is that we are in the midst of a sea change in Western civilization.
Yep.
And that there are very dark forces trying to steer us into a very, very dark place, right? Klaus Schwab wasn't joking when he and the World Economic Forum released that 8 predictions for 2030 several years ago, one of which was that that democratic values would be pushed to the breaking point, right? What are they trying to do? What is this all about? It's about implementing a new world order where there are, you know, maybe a few thousand families who are in the club, in the capital, and then there are the rest of us who are, you know, controlled and run by a technocratic appointed group, and they are unelected and unaccountable. And so that's what's really happening. And I feel like a lot of the stuff that we're seeing is just drama to keep us looking over here or looking over there and emotional and upset. And, you know, somebody who works with me, she said the first thing that she felt was, oh my gosh, I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah, well, he's been elevated to messianic status now, isn't it? It's like God turned his head and people are all in, all of a sudden, all in.
And Paul, and now there was this person who says that he made this prophecy 3 months ago that his
I've seen
ear
that.
Grays and all this stuff. And don't forget, in 2015, Mark Taylor issued his prophecy. He started sharing his prophecy that he had made in 2011 or 2012, something like that. So my point is that this is not the first time that we have sort of seen him deified to some extent, right? You know, this savior. And from my standpoint, nobody's going to save us except us.
Right.
We are the answer, right? I always say globalism is the problem and localism is the solution. Yeah. We are the answer. The rank and file citizens of the West need to stand up, engage, and chuck all of these evildoers out so that we are the ones who decide how we want our countries to be led. And the truth is that I don't think that there's a single country in the West that has not, whose populace has not taken its eye off the ball for the last 100 years and allowed this to happen.
We have, for sure. Yeah.
You get what you deserve in some ways. And so I think we want to change this. We need to step up.
Okay, just quickly, you reminded me, we've spoken to Naomi Wolf a few times on this program, and what you were saying reminded me of what she said. She said, it's like a darkness has descended upon the world. She actually said that. I kind of feel like that. Do you?
100%. But I don't think it just descended upon us recently. I think it's been creeping for decades. And so people like me, you know, I made a documentary, award-winning documentary on vaccines. I started researching it in 2001 and it finally was released in 2011. So I've been researching this kind of stuff for over 20 years. And let me tell you, it's been dark for a long time. It's just that most people didn't get it. They didn't see it. And, you know, let me just share a story with you, Paul. When I was working on Wall Street, I was responsible. I ran Alliance Capital's European growth portfolio management and research businesses for 6.5, 7 years. And I was responsible for choosing what European stocks went into our portfolios on a European basis, an international basis, and a global basis. International means ex-US. And the CEO of one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world came into our offices. And this is a company that, you know, name brands, right? I used to see companies from all over the world because they would go through all these, they would go and visit the biggest shareholders all over the world. And so I would see, you know, CEOs from the US, CEOs from Europe, CEOs from all over the place come in. And the CEO, chief financial officer, head of R&D, and head of IR, investor relations, all came into our office to reassure us because we were one of the biggest shareholders in their company. And the reason we owned their company was because their stock was because they had a new blockbuster drug coming out that was supposed to help your heart. And there were rumors coming out of the phase 3 trials, which are the clinical trials before the drug gets FDA licensure. There were rumors emanating that this drug was killing people, that a few people on the clinical trial had died. And so they were coming in to reassure us. So he sat down across the table from me and he said, listen, the bad news is the FDA is going to make us put a black box warning on the packaging. The good news is we still think we can do $7 billion in peak sales.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So my point is, when you have seen that firsthand, Paul, when you have heard someone be so just dismissive of human life in pursuit of corporate profit, and that this is no one else is reacting but you. I mean, that in that moment, I was like, whoa, I got to get the heck out of here. I am playing for the wrong team. I have position, power, money, status. I have everything I want, supposedly. And this is happening. And you know what? I'm actually empty. My point is, this darkness didn't just emerge 4 years ago. It emerged a long time ago while people were asleep at the wheel. And I am essentially not condemning, but charging all Westerners with this same fault because we have been part of the problem. Who goes to their city council meetings? Who attends their school board hearings? Who is engaged? So very few of us. They do whatever they want because we haven't been looking. And now it's up to us to decide if we want to change that.
I think that's probably quite a good segue into talking about the Health Freedom Defense Fund. I kind of have the impression now why you went there. Do you want to tell us a bit about how you got there and what you're aiming to do with it?
Yes. So, you know, researching the whole vaccine issue for the last 23 years, essentially, it awoke me to the reality that that health agencies aren't there to protect us, that they're actually protecting the pharmaceutical industry, that that it's incumbent upon each and every one of us to stand up for our rights because no one else is going to do it, and that we are responsible for all of the choices in our life. And I know that's a scary thought, but it's the truth. So that movie, traveling the country, going to all sorts of places, winning awards, helped me to understand the primacy of the individual and the imperative of medical freedom. And it also educated me about this darkness that we've just spoken of. And it's very, very clear to me that all of the different pieces of the puzzle, like all of the bricks were laid in order to prepare the way for this authoritarian response to a public health emergency that we witnessed in 2020.
So you're saying that that was like a very conscious step-by-step, brick-by-brick process, incredibly thought out, to incrementally, to prepare the ground, incrementally get to, maybe we're not even at the point yet, but maybe we're close. There's a kind of evil genius there, isn't there?
I would say so. I think, and this is the good news, though, is that more and more people have woken up to this reality. When I made the movie and it first came out, the people who really understood the vaccine situation, the vaccine issue, they totally got it, the movie. But the people who didn't, CDC wouldn't lie to us. Come on, FDA is there to protect us, right? So yes, what you, in answer to what you just asked, it's very, very clear. Look at 2001, 9/11. 45 days later, we get the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act does all sorts of things to facilitate a draconian response. 2 weeks after the Patriot Act is the Model State Emergency Health Powers legislation in the United States, which accords extraordinary health powers to state governors in the event of a public health emergency and to the State Department of Health. I mean, that was just random. And then, of course, then you have all of the scares. You've got the avian flu back in 2004. And what do they do? The PrEP Act, which provides blanket immunity to all of the producers of medical countermeasures, tests, masks, vaccines, all these things. Can't sue them for anything. And then you fast forward, they try out swine flu. Swine flu was a total hoax. They've tried out others as well. Zika was as well, many, many others. And then you see in the Defense Authorization Acts of 2011, I think, or 2012, and then 16, you saw in the United, I'm talking about the US only because I think it's a microcosm of the bigger picture, right? And this is what happened here in order to facilitate this. And it happened in other places too. So in 2012, they actually removed something called the Smith-Mundt Act, which prohibited the CIA from propagandizing American citizens. And in 2016, they set up the program to actually do it, and they funded it. This stuff took a long time, right? It didn't happen overnight. And it's happening while no one's paying attention and everyone's thinking, they'll never do this. But if you were paying attention, if you were deeply involved in the vaccine issue, you would have, like me, at the very beginning of 2020, you would have said to yourself, oh, they're finally doing it. It was very clear to me from the early days of January of 2020 that this was the culmination of everything that they had been, paving the last years. And so what happened was I decided I was going to do something about it. And I set up Health Freedom Defense Fund to establish a societal norm of medical freedom. I want every human being on the planet, in every country, to understand that they and they alone get to decide what is put into or on their bodies. That's it. 100% absolute medical freedom. That's my mission. And then I want to codify that in law in this country with a view to having that then be a ripple effect to the rest of the world. So that's our mission. And what just happened was that we got a phenomenal ruling, a truly historic ruling in one of our cases. We had twice sued the Los Angeles Unified School District, and they have twice rescinded their COVID mandate for employees due to the litigation pressure. They didn't want to get an adverse ruling, so they rescinded their mandate. And then they tried to argue it was moot twice. Well, our case had been dismissed at the second case had been dismissed at the district court level. Let me just take a little digression. In the US, our court system works like this. You've got, it's a triangle. At the top is the Supreme Court. Below that are the, what are called courts of appeal. There are 13 circuits and 13 courts of appeal. DC is one of them, and the rest of them are all over the country. So the country is divided into these circuits. And then below them are the districts. And every state has at least one district, but some states have three districts. I think that's the most you have in any state. And so we filed in district court in California in the middle district, and we the case was dismissed. And the case was dismissed by the court saying that a Supreme Court case from 1905 called Jacobson versus Massachusetts says that the state has a rational interest in mandating a vaccination for public health purposes. Okay. And we said, well, you didn't actually read the case. This is wrong because Jacobson doesn't apply here, number one. And that's not what we argued, number two. And so we appealed the case. And the case went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the biggest circuit in the country. It's Alaska, Hawaii, California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Nevada, and Montana. And so it went to the Ninth Circuit, and a couple of weeks ago we got the ruling, and the Ninth Circuit said that we were, that all that we had alleged had to be construed in the most positive light, and that we had plausibly argued that the shots don't stop transmission or infection, and that as such, they must be treated as a private medical matter, right, not a public health matter. We also argued that natural immunity is real and must be acknowledged by the courts. And most important of all, Paul, we argued that Jacobson does not apply, because Jacobson only applied when there was something that was known to be safe and effective. I will leave aside that I don't think the smallpox vaccination was safe and effective, but that's what they ruled. And they didn't say that this confers a broad authority to the state. What the Supreme Court said in 1905 is, in a narrow extreme emergency, like a 30 to 40% death rate from smallpox, then the state has a rational interest in mandating a safe and effective shot. Or if people don't want to take it, they can be fined. It didn't say that employment could be conditioned on receipt of a shot. It didn't say that the government could plunge a needle into your arm. It didn't say any of that. But it's been used for 119 years to do just that. And what the Ninth Circuit said was Jacobson has been misapplied. And this is why it is historic. It is the first time in 119 years that a court, an appellate court no less, has narrowed Jacobson to a more, to its appropriate application. It's the first dent in Jacobson in 119 years. It's not the last, because ultimately I want to overturn Jacobson, but it's a very, very positive, seriously profound first start.
So to call it a vaccine was essentially a lie, right? Because it's not. And not stopping transmission, really, it falls out of that definition just on that, I would imagine. What does this decision, this case that you've just told us about, mean for the bigger picture? And will there be a ripple effect? And how could this end up? Because in the end, we want people to pay for what they've done, right?
Yeah. So the judges actually, in their opinion, one of them wrote a concurrence. So he wrote the majority and then he wrote a concurrence. And he said that it's that he has to question whether or not the school district actually has, that the board of supervisors of the school district actually have qualified immunity. Are they entitled to immunity? He opened the door and I thought, that's interesting. We didn't even argue that. But he is saying they have actually destroyed over 1,000 people's lives. They fired 500. They displaced more than another 500. And they're doing this still 3 years later. And so I think that's very interesting. So what this ruling actually says is that, first of all, it's binding right now on the entire Ninth Circuit. It is now what's called controlling law. So any lawsuit that's underway in the courts that revolve around a shot that does not have a public health justification can amend their complaints to reflect this new ruling. Okay. But on top of that, everywhere else in the country can refer to it as well. It doesn't control, but they can certainly point to it. It's very important. So in terms of getting us to a point where we get absolute bodily autonomy, it's a sea change, right? It's a sea change in the understanding. And what's so important as well is that the judges actually said that the school district was not entitled to any kind of deference. They were not entitled to benefit of the doubt because they had twice tried to manipulate the jurisdiction of the court. And they did not actually have anything to say in defense of their mandate, except that CDC says it's safe and effective. You know what the court wrote? Safe and effective for what? Question.
Wow.
Yes. So this is huge. And the reason it's so important is because it's happening in the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit has the most robust privacy and bodily autonomy rights in the country because they want to protect unlimited access to abortion. So how they're in a difficult situation. How do they now argue that you have the right to bodily autonomy for abortion, but not for other medical treatments? And something else that's very important is that in the last 50 or 60 years, there is a growing body of case law from the Supreme Court that has ruled that you have a zone of privacy around you and that you have a right to bodily autonomy, that you have the right to refuse unwanted medical interventions, even if they might save your lives. So what's really necessary is for Jacobson to get chucked in the bin, because that's where it belongs. It is at odds with the more recent jurisprudence. And it's at odds with just everything that's happened in the world. I mean, I couldn't vote in 1905, Paul.
Yeah.
No women can vote in the United States. And we had Jim Crow laws in place. Who wants those? You know, like nobody wants to go back to 1905. Why are we looking to a lawsuit, a Supreme Court case from 1905? It needs to go away. And that's really our goal.
The layered buy-in on all sorts of levels to overreach is such a, doesn't really capture it, does it? But to the overreach, it was all layers on down. I can understand the sort of like the Dr. Evils right up top, but why do you think it was so layered all the way down to, you know, going to see a doctor, the buy-in to something that's so obviously at odds with the common sense feeling of your own autonomy?
Yeah.
I'm still trying to work that one out. Maybe you can help us.
No, it's, you know, they say follow the money. You know, one of my friends is a guy named Andy Wakefield, Dr. Andy Wakefield. I'm sure you've heard of him. Have you heard of him? He was the measles doctor, the MMR doctor, the gastroenterologist from Britain who lost his license and his life and moved to the US because he was so persecuted for simply saying that he was concerned. He never said that he had proved that MMR causes autism, although they have more recently now found that he was right. Autistic enterocolitis is something real. He said to me, you know, Leslie, the US is the only hope because all these other countries have nationalized health systems, meaning that the control is from the top. There's virtually nothing that you can do when they tell you what to do. Look at what happened in New Zealand. Look at what happened in Australia. Exactly. Look at what happened in Britain. It was much worse in all of those countries, all the Commonwealth countries, Canada, than it was in the United States for one simple reason. Well, two simple reasons. One, we don't have nationalized health. We have a sort of a modicum of that, but that's not what we have. And two, we have a federal system which, you know, where we have governors and state legislatures that have the power for what are called the police powers. The Constitution says that the police powers are reserved to the states, and the U.S. and under the police powers are health powers. So the CDC could only advise. That's why, I don't know if you know this, Paul, but Health Freedom Defense Fund, my organization, we're the ones who defeated the federal mask mandate in 2022.
I'd heard about that. Yeah.
Okay. So the reason that we won that was because we said, this is not, CDC doesn't have this power or authority. And the judge looked at everything and said, you know, you're right. Absolutely. My point is that the states have the health powers, and that's why you were able to see independent individual state responses. Most of them fell in line, but not all of them. But the biggest thing is that most physicians around the world are controlled by their state licensing boards or the medical licensing boards in their country. And if they deviate from what's called standard of care, then they get hauled in front of the licensing boards and then they're threatened with their licenses. That's why they even, and then what they did was they purged anyone who challenged them. So, you know, if you stood up and you said, hey, I don't agree with this, this seems crazy to me, they just canned you. I mean, it happened to people in New Zealand. It happened to people all over the world. And so it's just, you know, and what is it? Sinclair Lewis, I think he said that if you want to understand a man's position, just know who pays his, you know, who pays his salary, right? Yeah. I'm paraphrasing, yeah. But you know the idea. And so it's not that they were, that they didn't see or didn't look or didn't question. It's that their paychecks depended on them not looking and not questioning. And that is the really, truly pernicious aspect of this.
But they must weigh on a conscience very heavily. But I suppose
everyone has
a price. Everyone has a price, eh, in the end.
Most people do. I mean, you know, look, people do. I walked away from a lot, so I understand that. But I think at the end of the day, you're either a principled person or not, and you have to look yourself in the mirror and you go to bed, you know, at night by yourself. Right. And it's up to each and every one of us to do the right thing and to let that inner compass be our guide. And if you're not doing that, then you're a real problem.
That's something that's always interested me because I never took the jab and it's fascinated me having talked to other people, you know, just on the question of informed consent. Did you get informed consent? And it's like a blank look. And I'm like, what's that? You know, it only could mean the difference between your body working or not. It just hadn't occurred to people. I'm, again, still trying to figure that one out. How do we get so numb? Life's too easy?
I think the thing is that's most interesting is how people just believed that something had been developed at warp speed, right? In a matter of a few months. How do they know that it's safe? Why would you subject yourself to something that you have no clue whether it's safe or not? I just found that astounding. But listen, like I said, this darkness didn't descend upon us in the last 4 years. It descended upon us a long time ago, and they've been working to it. Think about in the US alone, all of the programs, the mind control programs, MK Ultra, right? To manipulate people, CIA installing back in the 1970s, I think they already had 3,000 assets in the media.
Yeah, journos. Yeah.
How many do they have now? 10,000, 20,000? I don't know. And then you think about social media. And cancel culture, I mean, kids today are so afraid to say anything because they will just get, you know, canceled into oblivion on social media. So they keep their heads down, right? They have shifted our culture from being about speaking up and sharing your view to shaming people for doing so. And so I think that's part and parcel of this. And then I think that there's been a universal dumbing of us down for many decades, in particular in this country, but all over the world. And then on top of that, you know, the media, like, what do kids read and do they read and what do they watch? They watch all of these like extremely riveting, you know, Marvel movies and things like this. And their parents are too busy and the state is essentially raising them. And if, you know, I think a lot of parents, they're just too tired. And so they say, you know, this is what I believe. They don't teach why they believe that.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And then their kids don't understand. Oh, okay. Now I get it. Right. Okay. I see this happening. Well, I'm going to take what my parents taught me, the whys of it, and apply it to this. It's so easy to be manipulated if you're just told, you know, to do what I say. And so I think it's this multifaceted, long-term undermining of Western civilization by some really dark forces.
Yeah. The intergenerational nature of that effort is interesting as well, because you'd think people would want a payoff in their lifetime, and maybe they get sort of a payoff, but the ultimate goal is kind of beyond the lifespan. Now, let's say we go back to 9/11. That's come up 25 years ago soon. You know, a lot of people who are around then are not here now who might have been involved in that. They were maybe in the early 50s then, okay? But they weren't going to see the fruits of their labor, if there were any, in their lifetime, yet it's still, that's still part of the effort.
And they pass it down. You know, listen, Bill Gates' father was a eugenicist.
Yeah.
He was, you know, one of the founders and on the board. He's seriously involved at Planned Parenthood. I mean, this is, you know, his son is just doing his, he's carrying on. And I think this is what they do.
Right.
This is what they do. You know, think about Brzezinski. Zbigniew Brzezinski. He was a, you know, counsel in foreign relations and all these things. And what's his daughter do? She's
Morning Joe.
And so my point is, I think that they do do intergenerational stuff. It does pass on. Look at the Rockefellers. There've been generations of them, Rothschilds, generations of them doing, pushing these different agenda. And I think the reason that it hasn't been faster is because they didn't have the technology to actually take this to the next level, but now they do.
And that's the smartphone, basically, isn't it?
It's a smartphone. It's all the biometrics, right? You know, now when you come into the country, unless you say no and opt out, your face is just taken right instantly. And most people just do it because they just don't know. They don't even know that they can opt out, right? So it's the ability to censor everything we say and do. They have to monitor it first, and then they can censor it. It's the, you know, having the device that follows you everywhere, that people take with them everywhere, that people sleep with, they are totally engaged to. It's the media and all of the manipulations from the media. And when I mean media, I mean, you know, Hollywood and all of the movies and the television shows and Netflix and all these things, they're all pushing this stuff, right? And the newspapers. So you need the technology. You need the society to be susceptible. And I think something else. You may think this is this may sound a little bit crazy, but I think it's very, very accurate. And that is that 9/11. Do you remember what happened in 9/11? After the initial incident where the planes flew into the buildings, how many times was that shown on television?
Over and over.
Why? How do you brainwash someone? How do you install a fear, a trauma pattern in someone's psyche? By frightening them and showing them something terrifying, just so shocking, so awesome, not in a positive way, right? Shock and awe. What did Bush Jr. say when he was going into Iraq? A shock and awe campaign.
Right.
What was COVID?
Shock and awe.
Shock and awe, a ticker tape of cases and deaths nonstop. It's a production. It's shock and awe. And so what they've done with these incidents is to install this kind of, I believe, a trauma pattern on the psyche of most people, those people who don't see through it. And then that makes them susceptible to this manipulation. They're terrified because they don't see that they're being played.
I have personal experience of this before this activity. I was a newsreader on a national radio network, okay, and during COVID, and we would have every hour the latest infection total, and I could tell that I was engaged in something that was fear-generating because there were no statistics on seriously ill, hospital admissions. People have died. It was only infection cases. And of course, it was like Casey Kasem's American Top 40. Keep going up, you know. And I questioned that a number of times in our newsroom, and I was totally ostracized for it.
And Paul, they weren't even cases. A case historically is a sick person. It was just a positive PCR. But go ahead.
Yeah.
So you were ostracized in your studio.
Basically, well, in the newsroom environment as a sort of like a heretic, you know, how, and these people were experienced journalists, and the principles of reporting is to report, you know, all sides so people can make up their minds. You just kind of triggered me on that one, but that's why I'm so fascinated with how people get into this mindset when at, you know, first appearance, you're dealing with smart, intelligent, you know, well-rounded professional people. And it's just not that, turns out not to be that in the end.
But there's also been this, all these terrorist events. Think about what happened in New Zealand, right? These things also, when we are frightened, our higher cognition shuts down and we go into our reptilian brain where we're all about fear. And what do? We defer to authority. And so I think that those kinds of things, whether it's the, you know, London bomber or the Paris bomber, it's happening all the time. And these things are actually affecting people so that they are more primed for another triggering, frightening event. And then when it happens, and they are literally just putting it out there constantly, then it's so easy to fall prey to it.
Here's a big question, probably to round off on now. Are we going to win, Leslie? Are we going to win? Tell me we're going to win.
Absolutely, we're going to win. I mean, listen, there are so many more of us, number one. And number two, there are billions awake to what's going on compared to what was the case 5 years ago. So this is one of the things that many of those of us who are in the vaccine safety awareness movement have been saying for the last few years. We've been working at this for 20 years and they achieved in literally 2 years what we've been trying to do for decades, right? They woke up. 50% of American parents have questions about vaccinations or outright will not give them to their children. That is unbelievable. That's something we could have never achieved on our own. That said, I think it gets darker before it dawns because it has to get darker before it dawns. It has to, we have to wake up more people and people have to be, you know, shaken out of their comfort. In the West, we have unbelievable comfort and we're very busy in our lives. You know, everyone's got a job, moms and dads, and we're, you know, doing all we can to make sure that Johnny gets to the footy game or whatever. And, you know, all the things that we're doing, we're busy. We want our, you know, we want to have it all and we can't. And so I think it's got to get a little bit darker. There's got to be some more things that frighten people in order to just really wake up. I think there's another issue in that I don't know how it's working in countries like Canada and Britain and Australia and in New Zealand. But here, what's happening is Americans are self-sorting themselves into camps.
It's happening here.
Is it?
Yep.
Okay. So there's a massive exodus from, you know, New York, California, Washington, Oregon to places like where I live in Idaho. And 80% of the people moving in are fleeing all of the ridiculous policies. Tell me what's happening in New Zealand.
Well, we can't quite do that because we don't have states.
Yes.
But new communities, groupings are emerging and it's very obvious and very clear. You know,
is it? Yeah, so is it like one town or one community will become more?
No, it's distributed, but like-minded people are finding each other at scale now.
Okay.
I think.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's so early days, but it's happening.
The reason I think it's so important is because I truly believe that the U.S. will cease to exist because it's balkanizing. So, you know, what's happening is Idaho is becoming more freedom oriented and California is becoming less freedom oriented with every single day, with every move, because the person fleeing California is no longer a vote or a, you know, belief in California, and they're coming to Idaho. And now we are outweighing the others even more than we did before. And, you know, listen, what is a country, Paul? It's a group of people who have a social fabric, right? They have some kind of cohesive agreement on fundamental beliefs that underpin their system and their society. But we don't have that anymore because there are people who don't believe in free speech anymore in this country, a protected right. And then there are people who literally will die for it. There are people who believe in medical freedom and people who are diametrically opposed to it. And so we're at this stage now where, you know, in the U.S., you've got the people who believe in the Second Amendment, the right to carry, you know, to self-defense. and then those who are radically opposed. And then, of course, they're the ones who believe in critical race theory, that you should be judged by the color of your skin, and that boys aren't boys and girls aren't girls, and all these kinds of things. And so my point is, we are really separating into these two poles, and we don't have a country anymore, because there's a group in the middle, but they are being marginalized by the people on the, you know, on the sides. And the group that's really committed to freedom and to what they believe is truth, those people are not going to allow themselves to be ruled by the others who are forcing their worldview on them. And so that is like a tension that cannot persist. And I think that I don't think that it's going to come to a war, but I think that at some point in the next, I don't know, 6 to maybe 10 years, there will be a separation, because there no longer is a cohesive fabric of society. There was a poll that came out a short while ago. I forget who did the poll, but it was something. They had actually surveyed Americans before COVID. How do you feel about freedom of speech? Do you think the government should censor speech and dictate what Americans, you know, a silent thought that you, you know, speech that you don't agree with? And 70% of Americans from both the left and the right and the middle all said no. Absolutely, the government should not be allowed to do that. They did another poll 6 months ago, and you know what? 80% of conservatives say that the government shouldn't be allowed to censor thought, but fewer than 50% of liberals say that the government shouldn't be allowed. They want censorship. Yeah. So how do you, you don't have a social fabric anymore.
Yeah, no, I see your point. And just a bit of practical advice from you. I think you could probably give it to our listeners. And that is, how forceful should we be about the conversations we have with people? Because, you know, fire hosing people with this stuff is probably a bit too much, but it has to be clearly communicated, doesn't it? And it's awkward. Is it time now just to say, look, cards on the table, this is how I see it is, and, you know, no dressing it up, no putting lipstick on it, this is how it is. And I think people struggle with that, how, you know, people like myself and others who are sort of in the same thinking, how far, because we've got family members who have got issues like this, and I've held back. What do you recommend? And we won't hold you to it, don't worry. But what do you recommend in terms of communicating these obvious, very obvious things that we see to people who we think need to know, even if it's uncomfortable? How far do we go, do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a group, maybe, I don't know if it's 10 or 20%, that we will never reach. And I think that's something that each and every individual has to decide. You know, maybe that's their mother or their brother or their sister, and they have to say, it's not worth it to me to completely lose my relationship. So that's one thing. But I think that if you are going to try with people, then the best thing to do is to come from a place of love, which is that I love and care about you, and I want to share something with you, and I want to discuss this with you because it's really important to me and I'm afraid for you. And the other thing is, which I find the most powerful, is to ask questions. So when they push back, then say, well, but do you think it's right that the government should tell us what to put in our bodies? Do they have to live with the consequences of our choices? You know, asking these questions so that you're prompting thought and discussion rather than just fire hosing is far more productive in my experience.
Leslie Manoukian, it's been fascinating chatting with you. Thanks for making us some time, and a lot to sort of go away and think about for our audience there, though that's already been on their mind pretty well. Fantastic to hear about that case, and it'll be so interesting to see what ripples out from that. Great to have you on our radio station.
Paul, thank you so much. Can I just share where people can follow us?
Oh, please. Please.
So you can, you know, first, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a really great conversation. It's been actually really fun. But people can follow us at healthfreedomdefense.org, and you can join our newsletter. You can sign up to be a member, which is only $10. You can become a, or you can donate there. And we have Lots of very, very interesting content, a great legal corner. We've got lots of lawsuits that we're still pursuing, and hopefully we'll keep on making change.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.